Welcome to the Nursing and Midwifery Emporium podcast, a podcast about this nursing life. I'm Nicole Nash-Arnold from Nurse Manager HQ.
And I'm Sue Walker from the Nursing CPD Institute. And together each week, we seek out interesting people to discover what a red-hot nursing life looks like.
Today, I welcome to this Nursing Life microphone is Leanne Bowes. Leanne is the chair of the Australian College of Nurse Practitioners, and Leanne was endorsed as a nurse practitioner in 2009 after completing her master's in nursing in 2004. Leanne is a gun on all things eczema and asthma, and where her consulting practice serves families in optimising wellness and managing symptoms and asthma plans, as well as general primary care plans across the lifespan. She also has a component of her consultancy where she consults with area services and GP practices to redesign models of care and has a medical property development business. She also teaches the Master of Nursing nurse practitioners part-time. And as the president of the ACNP, Leanne serves to lead and support clinical practice for the almost 2,000 NPs in Australia. You're a busy chick, sister. So tell me about the journey of how you've come to be here.
Well, it's quite a long one, as you can imagine. Obviously, I started out as an RN, and over time, you develop more confidence, more knowledge. I think with nursing, you learn a lot on the job. You learn naturally, but you also have a natural hunger for knowledge as well, and a natural development pathway. So a lot of the learning started on the job. Then seeking postgraduate education, obviously, to back up the practice that I was working in and the area that I was working in. And then you start to realise you can do more than what you're doing, that you actually know what to do for a lot of your patients, but because of the limitations of the role, you actually can't. You find yourself helping other health practitioners of all kinds to provide care to patients as well. However, in many places I've worked, other healthcare professionals, so this development in the role is not about competing with other health professions or competing with health services. It's actually about maximising what you can do. And the other thing about my career development has really been around looking at those areas where there's no physical health services, there's no clinic where there needs to be one, people can't access services, and also to help some of these businesses survive, because a lot of healthcare businesses are small businesses, and it's a really tough environment to survive in. So that's sort of why I've diversified into being a nurse practitioner, practicing clinically, and also the business side of things as well.
Yeah, it's an amazing way of operating, really. So, Leanne, I actually met this nurse who contacted me regarding one of my e-learning courses, because she was at the classic nursing crossroad where we perceive nursing career paths. We either stay a clinician, become an educator, or take the management road. For her, really, she wanted to take the clinical pathway. So she saw that pathway for herself as being an NP. But for many reasons, many of which I believe are self-limiting, and I know she's listening, so I'm delighted that she'll hear my message again, she felt like she was too old for the NP option. There was a great deal of confusion about how it works anyway. And I think she represents many of the nurses out there who find themselves in the same position. So I asked her some questions that she was dying to know. So to start with, Leanne, tell me the differences between an NP and other clinical nurses where of an experienced nursing clinician, like the clinical nurse consultant or the diabetes educator or that kind of thing.
Look, it's a common crossroad to start with. I was at it just before I started my master's as a nurse practitioner. I was asked to step up into a management role. Let's just say it didn't last very long. I couldn't separate from the provision of clinical care. And
a classic problem.
Yeah, and I had felt that I had gone as far as I could go within the limitations of the RN role. So let's just say this crossroad is there for all of us. Some of us choose different paths, and each one of those paths is worthwhile. There's no one better than another. But it is true that one will be suited to each nurse and not necessarily the other. So I do strongly encourage people to choose their pathway that's more natural for them or suits them the best. I can also address the age issue, but you're asking me about the NP role and the difference between other roles. I think other roles can absolutely have components of advanced practice. So advanced practice is where you have advanced assessment skills, diagnostic skills. You're able to determine what investigation somebody might need. You've got that higher level of decision making. So a lot of these other advanced clinical roles like clinical nurse consultant, diabetes educator, they can absolutely incorporate components of that. However, they're not required to. One clinical nurse consultant doesn't necessarily operate at the same level as another. They're not all at the same level all the time. They're not required to be. Whereas the nurse practitioner is required to be at that advanced level across all of those areas. So the nurse practitioner has to spend years and also through advanced education at the master's level, proving that they consistently make advanced level decisions, that they're safe practitioners, and that their consistency at that advanced level is there all the time before they can become a nurse practitioner. So that's the difference. I think clinical nurse consultant roles and other advanced practice roles can certainly, and look, I would encourage them strongly to look at the nurse practitioner position, because one of the key differences is, for me, coming from such a position into a nurse practitioner role, it's like I can finish what I always knew how to do. It's like I can complete that patient journey for them. It's not, it's not in isolation. It's still as a part of a larger team. And even now working out in independently in primary care, I'm still part of the team. I have my mentors, medical, nursing, allied health. We work together for the best interest of the patient. But I'm able to practice independently. I'm able to help that patient through that entire journey. That's what a nurse practitioner can do.
So just briefly, I think Kel's in her mid to late 40s. Do you think she's too old?
Oh, gosh, no, definitely not. I've had, as I, you also know, I teach the course, a Master of Nursing, and we have students in their 60s. So you're dedicated to nursing. You're dedicated to caring for people. Becoming a nurse practitioner as a clinical nurse is actually the ultimate fulfillment of all your career, and it allows you to use all of that knowledge and experience that you've built up all these years and finally be able to use it to your maximal ability. So it's definitely not too late. It will give you, even if you've only got 10, 15, 20 years left in your career, and let's hope that in our 40s it's not more than 20, but we don't know. It will give you the best years of your career yet.
How does the funding work for an NP? I spoke with Georgie McGrath recently, who's an independent nurse functioning as a CNC and case manager in her own business, supporting people with disabilities, mainly spinal injuries. And she's accessing funding largely via the NDIS or private fee-for-service. Is it different for NPs and how they're funding, and how secure is that funding?
So there are limited NDIS items for nurse practitioners at the moment, provided you're eligible for a provider number. You can then go off and bill for time-based items. And there's a lot of work happening at the moment to expand that, to enable nurse practitioners to actually provide viable services in the community, because you'll find the nurse practitioner, you know, will set up in the remote areas or in the area where nobody else is practicing to try and bring services into those areas of need. So NBS is undergoing significant review. That is, of course, federal funding. So you can only apply for a provider number if you're working in primary care or in a private practice. In the state-funded health services, we're reliant on the states to actually fund positions for nurse practitioners. There are some private health funds, and I believe there is some DVO, NDIS, some limited arrangements that might be available in some, within some of those schemes. But there are massive problems with restrictions on nurse practitioners, and there's still a lot of work to be done around managing people with workplace injuries, managing people who are involved in road traffic accidents. You know, we're working on all of those at the moment. We have been for quite some time. And I have to say, to anybody else, it might seem like progress is very slow, but in actual fact, we can see the shift is beginning. There's definitely a lot of work happening there. But for the time being, you know, I'm operating my private practice on the existing NBS items. We are able to bulk bill, or we are similarly able to private bill with a Medicare rebate depending on your business model, your operating costs and all of those things, that's an individual decision for nurse practitioners.
And what sort of capacities do NPs work? Nurses historically are not necessarily an entrepreneurial crowd and generally pretty risk averse. So the notion of starting up a business and popping a shingle out open for business strikes fear into most nurses' hearts. Do nurse practitioners only work in capacities such as yourself in your own consultancy practice, or can they work as contractors to hospitals? Is there an option for regular, permanent, full or part-time role where we're just employed like we were as RNs?
All of those are possible. All of those are possible. So over the course of my nurse practitioner career, I've been employed by a state-funded hospital to work in multiple departments within the hospital. Because they acknowledged my broad scope of practice, I came from a primary care and emergency background, rural and remote, so they tried to maximise the use of my skills and my scope of practice, let me work across the spectrum, providing primary care, emergency department care. So those roles exist. Sometimes they are in a highly specialised area. So you might find a nurse practitioner in a state-funded facility or a state hospital solely working in endocrinology, because they are absolutely specialised. But we must never forget, we must never forget that they might be highly specialised in an extremely high level in relation to diabetes, for example. But they still have a broad scope of practice that underpins that. They're not seeing a patient, seeing someone with diabetes and looking after only their diabetes. They're seeing the whole patient. People are more complex than a specialty. And I think we need to consider using nurse practitioners a bit more broadly. Look, the private sector needn't be feared so much. I'm not encouraging nurse practitioners to leave the public system at all. I'm just saying, give it some thought, don't be afraid. And college actually offers support, and we'll be rolling out more support processes for people thinking about going into private practice. And we certainly answer a lot of questions about it on a regular basis.
I bet. So that's one of the things I think, in keeping with our nursey risk averse ways, I think nurses worry about taking the plunge of doing a master's in NP, finding that there are limited opportunities at the end of that road. What are the opportunities like out there?
I think the opportunities in the past have been a bit limited, but there's so many now. There really are so many now. And we have seen, we often hear NPs are as rare as hen's teeth. A lot of the state health services are crying out for them. They advertise, they don't get any applications. But at the same time, we have to understand that the barriers to our practice, and there still are a few, and the barriers to funding that have existed in the past and are starting to get better, have put people off enrolling in what is a very, very significant education program. So this is at master's level. So we are required to have postgraduate qualifications already to get into that master's. So you've got your degree, your postgrad, but that's not enough. You've got to actually prove that you're working in advanced practice, and you have to prove how many hours you've done. You have to have mentor arrangements in place. There's just so much required, and look, rightfully so. If we're going to be producing autonomous health practitioners, I totally agree with it, but it can be a big step, not to mention a financial step and a big time commitment. Don't let me put you off. It's extremely rewarding at the other end. But it has put people off when at the other end you're not sure if there's a job out there, or you're not sure if the funding that supports the role that you're aiming for is consistent or going to be there long term. It's a big commitment to make. And I think with the changes that we've started seeing around funding, around starting to remove some of those barriers that really don't achieve anything, that we're starting to see this upswing in enrolments into courses. So naturally it's going to take them a few years. So the master's can't be done quickly. You know, you've got to do a significant component of prescribing and pharmacology at the master's level, as well as all the other subjects in assessment and diagnostic. But we are seeing an upswing in enrolments, and I think that's because they can see the light at the end of the tunnel now. So there's a lot of nurses out there that have been waiting, and waiting in the wings, waiting to see what happens with nurse practitioners in Australia and wanting to do the course. And I'm really encouraged to see the greater numbers starting to come through.
When I looked at the nursing and midwifery board stats on NPs, I see that there are 1,900 nurse practitioners in Australia, oddly, 42% of them in Queensland. And, I mean, Queensland is not known for being that progressive. So I wondered if that was because Queensland is particularly remote. Aren't NPs only used in remote and rural areas, or is it an urban gig as well?
Well, I think there's no real clear line there. It's NPs tend to develop their scope of practice and their roles. They develop their expertise in areas that are underserviced or areas of need. So that means you will find NPs working in areas that health services are lacking. You'll find NPs working in specialties that are desperately needed. So that's why Queensland, with your rural and remote areas, you'll find that actually in Queensland, a lot of regulations have changed and been updated to support nurse practitioner practice. They're actually becoming quite progressive and quite supportive. And that's why you do see those steps in Queensland, that remoteness. And the lack of services in those remote areas, we can definitely explain that one. But I don't want people to think nurse practitioners are only needed or found in remote and rural areas. There's desperate areas of need in metropolitan areas as well. There's nurse practitioners providing services in specialties where we just don't have enough people working. There's nurse practitioners like me in the community that are dealing with patients that have just can't find anybody to help them with their condition. There's nurse practitioners working with the homeless. There's nurse practitioners that are going into residential aged care to provide services and you know, they're not worried about doing that. They're happy to go. So the need exists in all areas.
I've worked with a few people who've been NPs or are currently. For example, a friend of mine was an NP in the UK where she held a role mainly at optimising ED utilisation, which is to say she'd assess ED presentations, determine their suitability for ED and whether to treat or discharge using her advanced scope of practice. What sort of areas have the most NPs in Australia? Is it chronic health or ED, or are there other areas too where nurses can advance their existing skill set into that NP role?
Chronic disease management for sure. Emergency is a big component. Emergency and primary care have a lot of crossover, as does chronic health and primary care. So it's really hard to put people into neat categories when you talk about nurse practitioners. And a lot of them too are in aged care. And so, for instance, someone like me that's in primary care and has an emergency background can most certainly go into aged care and assist with acute things as they arise. Another nurse practitioner that is great with chronic diseases, we also have nurse practitioners that deal with dementia-specific conditions as well. We have a generalist base and we have additional specialties on top of that generalist base, and we practice advanced practice across the board with our scope. So we know where our limitations are, but certainly it is across all sectors of health, and I think we need to continue that approach.
Leanne, what does the future hold for NPs? There's a great deal of change in the healthcare system in Australia, and we've recognised that with an ageing population, with increasing chronic disease, our needs for community care and primary care are far outweighing our need for acute care. So it seems an obvious fit for nursing, where that setting is less reliant on the medical model, where the diagnosis in a way has been done and it's about wellness and function rather than treatment. And nurses are perfect to play that primary role where we liaise and escalate to GPs and specialists. So that seems intuitive to me, but I am biased, admittedly. Is this a growth area for nurses for the future?
Yeah, I think it is. And look, I know it's not one model's better than another. It's that we need all the models. If anybody sits down and tells me, oh, no, the needs of Australians, the health needs of Australians are being met, you know, well, there's somebody that needs to see them, because there is absolutely no way. And I have no time for this competition approach. Nobody's in competition here. This is not a turf war. We can coexist. In fact, We actually coexist really well in reality. So every health professional on the ground that works with nurse practitioners works super well with them, appreciates them, and that appreciation is mutual. It is the public, I guess, side where there are people that speak out against it or have biases against it. And look, in the absence of major issues, there's been no major issues with the role in Australia, it appears anti-competitive. And believe me, of all people, I understand the business side of health as well. But as a nurse, my motivation, and all my colleagues have the same motivation, of providing health services where they're needed. And we do have that wellness approach. So every patient I'm seeing at the moment, we're spending 10 minutes talking about coronavirus. We're talking about the flu season that's about to kick off. We're talking about flu vax. So we're getting all that done in one consult, plus whatever they've come to see me about today, because I don't want them to wait till they get sick to come and see me. I don't want them to wait until the flu's rampant in our community and then start thinking, well, maybe I should have my flu vax. That is too late already. So we're very much about wellness. We're very much hugely education-based. We really want to teach our patients much more independent with their health.
Leanne, based on all the work that you do that is advocating for nurse practitioners, what is it that you wish all nurses and midwives knew so that they can live their best nursing life?
I think we all need to realise that there is so much more that we can do in our community, and there is nothing wrong with being ambitious. I think in many cases, and even in my own career, you know, I felt a bit trodden on by some of the senior nurses who were trying to put me back in my place. Have a look at each other and really look at what we've got to offer and offer that bit of support, because if we can support each other to develop our careers, develop our knowledge base, we can achieve so much more. And I do encourage nurses to strive for the best that they can do. So whatever pathway you choose, keep trying, keep working at it. And that pathway may not involve more education or more tertiary education. It might not include promotions. Your pathway is what is right for you. So if you want to continue in the same role, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. That doesn't mean you're in competition with somebody who's gone off and done their postgraduate qualifications or become a nurse practitioner. Because one of the things I found as a nurse practitioner is a lot of nurses around me get defensive about what they have or haven't achieved. And I look at them and think, my God, you've been nursing for 20 years. You're a wealth of knowledge. You're a wealth of experience. I'm depending on you to be part of my team and to support me as well. How can I support you? I really think we can live our best nursing life. I think the best nursing life is one lived together in a supportive environment and maximising everybody's pathway. And whatever pathway they choose, to choose the right one for them, and we all need to respect that that is the pathway that is that you have chosen.
Yeah, so beautifully said. I couldn't agree with you more. Leanne, thanks so much for being our guest at the Nursing and Midwifery Emporium's podcast and unravelling all of the mysteries about all things NP.
Well, thanks for having me. As you can tell, I love talking about it.
I love it too. It's great.
So anytime, I'd be more than happy to talk about NPs. Just let me know.
Sounds good. Thanks, Leanne.
Thanks a lot.
Bye. Sue, thoughts on the old nurse practitioner world?
Well, what a very interesting world Leanne told us about.
It was so interesting, everything that she had to say. I just couldn't stop getting more and more information out of her.
Yeah, no, she was very interesting. And it's probably a reflection on me there, Nick, but it's an area of nursing that I really don't know a lot about.
Me too, which is why I couldn't stop picking her brain, because I recognise there are nurse practitioners out there. I know a couple of people that have worked for me that have worked in the nurse practitioner role elsewhere, but it's so mysterious. I don't really know, or didn't, and how you do it and what sort of job opportunities, and, you know, did you have to have one specialty? And it's interesting. There were some real reveals in there that I just didn't know.
And the discussion about the difference from a nurse consultant to a practitioner. And certainly the rigors of the academic requirements that she spoke about are huge.
And that is, I mean, it's good news and bad news, I guess, if you're sitting out there thinking about you might jump in and you heard her say the rigors are tense, and that may be jelly bean in the no bucket. But on the upside, it does demonstrate how powerful that role is, because the nurse practitioners that are walking the earth in Australia, and I would argue internationally, are very powerful in their scope of practice and therefore what they can achieve and what they can do, which is pretty exciting.
And we should be far more respectful of those that have taken on that huge role, because they are the ones making it up as they go along, because it's not happened before. So from where the clients that they see to the way they set up their practices to how they're utilised within health systems are very different. There's no rule book.
You know, one of the things that I was really fuzzy about before I spoke to Leanne was what it looked like after you were qualified and where you would work and how that remuneration would work.
Yes.
So that was interesting.
Well, it was, and I suppose you still have choice to work within as a payee, working for, you know, a large healthcare organisation, but certainly working at a much higher level, and hopefully they're recompensed. Oh, we didn't ask her, you know, where they sit in the salary scale within the healthcare system. But yeah, and in multiple areas, in multiple specialties. But then the opportunity, as she does, she has her own private practice. And
I think it was what you're about to say. Sorry, I didn't know they could charge over and above as your GP does.
No, I thought it was wrongly. I thought it was, this is the Medicare rebate, and that's what you have to take. See, I always thought it was like a bit derogatory, like a nurse has to take the rebate, but a doctor, you can charge what you like.
Yes.
But apparently that's not the case. It's based on your business model and how you manage your business into how much money, you know, you need to charge for that service.
Isn't it interesting how nurses do that? Because I know most nurses would probably do that, that they would think, oh, well, I have to take the MBS schedule fees, but the doctors don't, but we don't ask that question.
No, because that's a reflection on, that says a lot about where we still are.
Why wouldn't we ask that question? But I had assumed the exact same thing about all of the nurses out there that have whatever their capacity to have a provider number, and I know the mental health and eligible midwives and clearly nurse practitioners do, and yet I don't know why I didn't think that through, but as soon as she said it, I thought, oh, of course.
Yeah, no, and maybe it's still a reflection, like, the feminists that have gone before us, you know, and all the battles that were fought, we still really don't have that view of our own worth as women. And I know there are men in our profession, but I'm talking about females in this instance, that we wouldn't consider. Like, if you spoke to a male nurse practitioner, he might just, you know, it may have been a different story.
I think there's quite a bit of research out there about the patriarchy of nursing, and it's not necessarily a reflection of the gender diversity, but that patriarchal thing, that the doctor-nurse game is one of patriarchy, and it's not necessarily about gender, it's about history, and that's positioned us in a place where we make these sorts of assumptions and self-limiting beliefs.
I'm going to go off track. I know you find this amazing that I would just run down this rabbit hole here, Nick. But I was reading a book the other day, and it was this woman in a senior position, and they gave her the financial spreadsheets, and she found out that her 2IC, who was useless, actually got paid more than her.
Oh,
wow. So she went flying into the CEO of the company and said, what is this? How does this happen? And he just blind, you know, he was an old guy, old school CEO, Lord something, something, something. And he said, but, you know, he is a man and has to support a family. So she went down, you patriarchal blah, blah, blah tirade, to which he was just glaring at her. And she said, what would you do if your 2IC earned more than you? And he said, that would never happen. And she said, no, and it's not going to happen here either.
Wow.
And, like, she won her case. But it's just still a reflection on even today, those things still happen. So let's go back to Leanne. Sorry, I'm out of the rabbit hole.
No, I like it. It's an amazing reflection on what we know intuitively to be true in our industry. But it's only times like these that you take a step back and go, yeah, we do think that, and we have to uncouple ourselves so that we can, I don't want to be like, you know, going nuts here, but take what's ours. This is an amazing opportunity, what Leanne presents in terms of a career option, particularly when you're standing at that threshold of, do I turn left and be a manager, straight ahead and be a clinician, or turn right and be an educator, in terms of, you know, that crossroads.
Yes.
And so this is an amazing opportunity for us to advance ourselves, both clinically and intellectually and maybe financially. We didn't ask that question. And yet we're stuck in, I'm too old, it's too hard, it's too scary, it's too lots of things and too patriarchal for me to do it. But no, it's there. Take it. Do it.
And that's the, I love the way, and I'm jumping to the end but happy to come back, but I love the way she said, we just need to support each other to develop our careers. Like if nurses do nothing else, we should be providing huge respect to these people that have advanced to this clinical level where they take on these additional roles and meet the needs. You and I were talking before we came on air about how these nurse practitioners are meeting the care needs of a huge group of people who don't have access any other way to healthcare.
Well, that's one of the things that frustrates me, and I love how she said, basically, if you're going to try and argue to me that the health needs of Australians are being met, then you need your head read, because there are enormous pockets of Australians, certainly regional, rural, but as she said, in metropolitan areas, where the, you know, it's 2 weeks to get to see a GP. So, you know, or the aged care facilities, you've got to bundle them up in an ambulance to get them to an ED to be seen, which is a completely inappropriate place for them to be, because access to GP or assessment isn't A, accessible, or B, appropriate for that, for their management. We're 50% of the workforce. There's an enormous amount of nurses out there with their hand up going, I'm here. Like, we've got an enormous bottle of knowledge, capacity to advance our scope of practice. All we need is to consolidate however it is that we're going to be funded. Well, I'll go and see them and sort them out. And yet it's not happening. And so that's what's really inspirational about Leanne and what the nurse practitioner role can do is fill a gap. It's there. We can fill it.
That's it. And we can fill it knowing how the health system functions. So we're not needing physician's assistants or, you know, advanced paramedics. Like, we have a body of a workforce of nurses that could rise to the occasion.
And it's, I love what she said, that this role is not competitive. And, you know, we know how to work with, not against, doctors. And we know how to work with other registered nurses and not against them. We can all be very happy meeting these needs because there's a desperate call for it. And if we're running around squabbling about which bit of turf everybody gets, then there are still people out there, you know, waving their hand going, guys, I've got, you know,
I'm sick.
Yeah, and I've got no one I can go and see and get advice and get back to being well. And there's just crickets.
And that's why pharmacies are taking on such a primary healthcare role, because
the front door to our primary healthcare system is the GP. So if you're waiting 3 or 4 weeks to get into a GP, then you're going to go somewhere to seek advice, and they're not going to let you into an ED department. So the only place you've got to go seek advice is the pharmacy.
Yes.
So, and that's why the pharmacy is starting to build its role in so many areas, because the public sees them as the next step, where realistically there are far more qualified health – not I'm, please don't think I'm, you know, dumping on pharmacists. I'm not.
Hello to all the pharmacists out there.
Hello. Please send your replies to Nick. He loves to hear from you. I'm not dumping on pharmacists. I'm simply saying that there is a workforce that could take on that role. And nurse practitioner clinics are coming to the fore. And I think that's a very viable option for the general public.
When she said about the competitiveness and it's not a turf war, we can all live happily ever after doing our thing, of course I knew that there was a level of angst and anxiety around the doctor side of that argument. But until she said about the registered nurses, I hadn't really thought about that either.
No.
No. That was interesting.
And I don't know what that is a reflection of, but certainly enough of her colleague experienced the issues that she would bring it up.
I think the wonderful thing about knowing and demystifying the pathway of the nurse practitioner route is that if you're a registered nurse and you have got decades of experience and a highly skilled person, and then in walks NP who takes over, I can see how you feel like, kill me. You've got this advanced scope of practice. I've got an advanced level of knowledge, and yet I can't sit in that chair. What was wonderful is that she said, I teach the NP program. We've got 60-year-olds.
Yes.
Go, girlfriends, do it. Go and get in there and leverage that amazing level of knowledge that you have and exploit that for something that's exciting and new and challenging and different.
And that is the future. That can be your future. If you're willing to take that level, the step to do the education, but you also have to be willing to take that responsibility. With that status comes, as she said, we have to be on trend and we have to be functioning at a high level 24/7. And that's the expectation. And certainly that's what those that do not necessarily like the nurse practitioner role would be waiting to pounce on.
And I think that's the amazing thing is nurses are already comfortable with an enormous amount of responsibility.
Yeah.
We do that. We carry the burden of the clinical risk that we face every single time, no matter what capacity we work in. Our core business is assessing clinical risk. Who's going to deteriorate? Who's going to get into trouble? We do that all the time. This is just a different sort of risk. Coupled with knowledge and coupled with suitable education so that you can feel like you've done your dues and you've not just gone, oh, yeah, no, I can do that. I'll just put up Mushinger as a nurse practitioner, which couldn't be allowed anyway, but it's not like you can. There's rigour and there's process and you can feel like you earned your ticket and like you did with nursing and that you have your every right to be out there promoting your advanced knowledge and scope of practice. Yep. And I think that's where the level of comfort about that new responsibility will come in.
No, I was exceptionally interested in what she had to say, and it is the future of where we can go.
I know, it's amazing.
Which is lovely.
It is lovely, Sue. Well, sister, I shall catch you next time we pick someone else's brain.
I look forward to the next rabbit hole we run down.
Farewell.
See you, matey. Bye.
Thanks for joining us this week on the Nursing and Midwifery Emporium. Make sure you visit us at the website www.nmemporium.com to subscribe to the podcast.
And if you'd like to put someone forward for us to interview, go to the same website and just click on the button.
See you guys.
Take care. Bye.